Good afternoon. I've asked Nico Buss to join me also. He's actually the source of the really detailed information as far as the department goes. This afternoon, I'd like to give you a brief overview and really address three specific items. First, an outline of the proposed 1995 budget, a review of the 95 increments and decrements, and finally, a brief discussion of position changes between 94 and 95. Each have a handout that I'll get to in a minute. In 95, the Department of Natural Resources is essentially asking for a status quo budget. There are a couple of items in terms of program receipts and modifications to the fire suppression budget, which will give an overall slightly higher number, and I will discuss that more specifically in a minute. In looking at the development of the budget, there were a number of things that we took into consideration that I'd like to review for you. First, in terms of sort of our workload, the Department, the Division of Lands and the Division of Water have pretty significant backlog of permit reviews that are affecting the department, and you'll see that reflected in our budget, our desire to get at those backlogs. Second, the department is looking at or would like to focus to a greater extent on a value-added forest products industry, specifically in the Fairbanks area in terms of a diversification option there, number one. And number two, our need to more thoroughly look at the implementation of the Forest Practices Act. That will go along with our desire to increase our timber harvest. You will see that reflected in the budget. Third, you'll see additional support in the Division of Oil and Gas for some litigation support that's ongoing, which is needed to support what is being done by the Division of Law, or the Department of Law, excuse me. The Division of Oil and Gas is a group that is doing a tremendous amount of work, and we're concerned about the effect that the continued litigation is having on the department. That litigation is very important, but in terms of the ability for that division to withstand that impact, you will see that dealt with in our budget this year. Also, you will see continued support for the Division of Mining and Geologic Survey, for the Division of Agriculture, and also you will see some discussion in our budget relative to the State Pipeline Coordinator's Office. If I might make a point there, there is a great deal of ongoing activity with the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, TAPS, in regards to BLM audits and that type of thing. It's very important that the state have a detailed role, technical, specifically in the analysis of those upgrades of TAPS, both from the standpoint of safety and what's required there, but also in regards to what is being spent, because that affects us in terms of the tariff that is being charged, and we're paying for 25% of that. Finally, in the budget, you will see continued support for our parks, and with the amount of tourism activity and the needs of the Alaskans alike, it's important, we feel, to support that particular group. All right, to get to the specifics, and you have a handout here that goes through a number of items. We are asking in fiscal year 95 for a $76,676,000 budget. Now, if you look in two items, general funds and general fund program receipts, you will see that that is an increase over fiscal year 94 of approximately $4,396,000. Those increases come in two areas. First, in general funds, we've requested $1.9 million in increased fire suppression support. That will bring up the budget to a total of $5.4 million, which will allow, the budget then will be able to cover administrative costs and one major project fire. Now, as we all know, our ability to predict what Mother Nature will do from year to year is pretty difficult, But the average fire year in the state has been about $9.5 million worth of expenditures. So this more clearly reflects what we're actually spending and is laid out in this budget. The other half of that increase comes from program receipts. And if you turn to the next page, it outlines the increments very specifically that we are requesting. And you'll see $579,000 in there for the Pipeline Coordinator's Office to deal with the potential Denali Pipeline Project, which is a MAPCO project bringing product down from Fairbanks down into the Anchorage area. If that project does not go forward, then those funds would not be collected. And that would be part of the right-of-way agreements that require an applicant to pay for the state's processing of a right-of-way application. You'll see $450,000 in there for the Division of Lands, and that's essentially to focus on that adjudication backlog. And essentially, the permit actions pay for themselves, and you would simply give us the ability to collect those fees. You will see in this budget also, as you work down, you will see $175,000 in for the geologic survey. I will tell you that this is something that the department would like to do in terms of collecting some fees from the industry to help support the geologic survey's activities. I cannot sit here and guarantee you that those funds will be collected. So just a note on that particular item. Also, under general funds, I forgot to mention that the AOGCC, the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, has requested an additional $200,000 for oversight activities on the North Slope. If you turn to the next page, as I mentioned, this is a status quo budget, but to achieve a status quo budget, we essentially had to move monies within the department. And these are outlined on this sheet. We moved $30,000 out of the commissioner's office to support an administrative services division. The reason that was created was simple. We had a whole group of activities that, in my mind, were floating within the department. I wanted to pull them under one specific director, which is NECO, to have more management control of that specific group. Second, we've moved $170,000 out of agriculture into lands, again, to deal with the backlog problem and to deal with the vacancy factor there. We also moved another $100,000 out of agriculture into forestry to help support the forestry activities. What we have done to make or keep essentially agriculture whole is the land management activities for agriculture have been transferred to that division, and it allows them to essentially stay even in that we've given them the opportunity, or asking you to give them the opportunity, to collect program receipts that will allow them to stay even in their budget. We have also moved $100,000 from geologic survey to oil and gas, and this is part of this litigation support. But I honestly feel our oil and gas division is strung about as tight as it can be right now. We need to be careful in cutting that budget anymore at all, and more likely it needs additional funds at this point. And finally, we moved $120,000 from the geologic survey to the Information Resource Management Group, which essentially is the information GIS group within the Department of Natural Resources, and basically the backbone of the group, because that is where all our information comes from. If you look on the next page, if you have any questions, I'll be happy to respond to them, but it gives you a view of all the increments and decrements from other funding sources and how we view those, and just briefly reviews those for you. In terms of positions, we are requesting an additional 24 positions this year over last. Those are broken down into the following categories. 5 would be for the Denali Pipeline Project. 2 would be for the AOGCC in terms of well testing and allocation oversight. 2 for Department of the Division of Forestry, and that would be a federal cooperative program. and one for the Division of Oil and Gas for litigation support. The other positions are simple technical adjustments that we would have been allowed to fill under our existing appropriations. That pretty much is an overview of the department's budget this year. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions you might have.
Any questions, Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner here, on the recorder's office, normally over the years we've had to do battle with keeping some of these recording offices over, and I see there's an increase. This still doesn't mean that there might not be in your budget some that are closed. Now, my assumption is everything is left alone, huh? All the recording officers?
Yeah, that, Mr. Chairman.
Governors have always cut them out, and we've had to come to battle and put them back.
That isn't our intent to cut them out. Actually, they more than fund themselves.
That's correct.
And our request is simply to allow us to collect the fees and allow them to stay open at this point.
After 3 years, we're glad that it's recognized that they'll pay for themselves and we serve the public.
Yeah, they do that.
I think combined, the recorder's office more than collects enough to offset the fees, but individually, some of the more rural recorder office do spend more than they take in.
Overall.
I think we have over $1 million worth of surplus program receipts there, don't we?
Yes.
Further questions, Representative Martin?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Noyer, I want to look mostly right now into the forestry management division. And I noticed over the last year that you have laid off 7 people in that division, which is all right in a certain way. I think I first need to ask you, what is your policy, if not philosophy, or your education tells you, when you have a forest infested with beetles or disease, what's your reaction to it as a person in charge of this human this resource? Do you harvest them? Do you bone them down? Do you just let them die? Or, well, what's your policy when we have beetle-infested trees?
Mr. Chairman, in response to that question, I need to put it in perspective in a group of ways. First, those trees have value to the state. And from that standpoint, we need to be careful that we don't lose that value, because in any budget year, those monies to the state are very important. In terms of the spruce bark beetle, the major area is obviously along the Kenai Peninsula right now. Department of Natural Resources, or the state, controls about 19% of the Kenai Peninsula. So we can only do whatever we can do within concert with other groups in that area. In terms of harvesting the trees, I think there is a lot of logic in harvesting the trees that we can get to. But we have to do that within the bounds that we have in front of us in terms of the statutes. And the Division of Forestry and the department in general are committed to working down a program of allowing those trees to be harvested to allow us to retain that value or obtain that value. But we have a 5-year leasing program that we are following. We are actually to the point by this next fiscal year that we will be able to offer between 60 and 70 million board feet of timber on the Kenai. But we had to go through a process to get to that point, and we have gone through that process. And we can't do it just in terms of just cutting trees. It has to be a program of reforestation and making sure that we're looking at our Forest Practices Act properly and we're managing that timber harvest. So it's a program like that. So in response to your question, we intend to move forward with harvesting of that timber, but we have to do it in concert both within the law and with the knowledge that reforestation and management of that Forest Practices Act is quite important also.
Well, they're somewhat encouraging, but your predecessors have said that too, that they believe in that. And I've been following the Kenai situation, and some of the other representatives have been following that Kenai situation for about 10 years now. And we make agreements, and we have studies, and they have reviews, and then we make agreements, then we file lawsuits, and then we make agreements, and then we go back into negotiating, and then we file another lawsuits. And I think the whole effort has been terribly, terribly wasted, because no one's going to take a hard line and say, look, these trees are dying. They are a major hazard to the people. We've got to cut them. Reforestation is natural. Even a guy like me that don't even know the top from the bottom of a tree know you have to plant new ones to go. So I just am so frustrated with the problem over the years, and I know it's something that you inherited, but I'd hate to see us another 10 years, and I don't know if I'll be here 10 years from now arguing the same point that maybe harvesting may be the answer.
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond, I can tell you I felt that the general frustration associated with this issue, and I am aware of it, and we are being proactive, but part of our being proactive is that we have to be in a position where people on the Kenai know what we're doing, and it, because of those very lawsuits, if we do something that we don't keep ourselves within the strict confines of the law, then putting out that timber for sale and simply being tied up in court hasn't accomplished the task.
Well, I'm going to get one step further. I think you have some people in the courts, I'm not quite sure of this, but I assume that they realize that time is of importance and that we've had lawsuits now for almost 10 years tying up those trees. Couldn't you and someone else tell them or even take the judge out there and say, look, the resource is dead. It's only spreading. Now, time is against us, Your Honor. We have to start cutting, harvesting someplace. Otherwise, I don't blame the environmentalist groups at all for suing and suing because they get paid accordingly. They get on commissions. They get paid. Now, why should we end this process? Another thing, on the local hire, not local hire, but the hire and freeze, you mentioned that here in the governor's review book and then also in your short enough synopsis here, and you have here that you laid off 7 and the potential savings there, but it's my understanding you had asked OMB for a new deputy director, and I'm thinking, why you need another deputy director? Wouldn't it be better if you have someone doing harvesting or looking into that? And how many new positions have you hired since the hire and freeze?
Mr. Chairman, and I'll have to ask Nico the specifics of it. We had about 94 positions vacant.
Totally, yeah.
We requested 18, and how many of those have been filled?
Actually filled. We are working on filling those positions. 16 of those have been approved.
16 have been approved?
Yes.
Why? If they were laid off in the first place, as you said here, and that was even before the hire and freeze. While you
most
hire them all back.
Mr. Chairman, most of these vacancies are federally funded, or many of them, or capital projects funded. So I guess I'm not completely clear on your question.
Well, you have a couple that are increased from a Forester Tech 3 to Forester Tech 4. I don't know what that means, but I'm looking at even details. I don't know who has this department or any other department, but it looked to me when I first read this last night and then again this morning that I'm not quite sure what kind of a shell game we have. We're laying them off, but then we're going to hire them back. And then when I heard that OMB had been requested to change position, is there a new deputy director now under you?
Mr. Chairman, there is a request for that. It's been approved. It's not been filled yet.
But you know who's going to take it up.
Yes. We're looking at an individual.
Are you going through the proper standards? They've been changed, too.
I think
there's a lot of criticism on that position, sir. I can give you the name. I don't want to say it out loud.
I think we are, yes. Maybe you need
to.
Okay.
We got Representative Brown and Representative Henley.
Thank you. There were two things I wanted to ask about. First, what's the consequence of not funding the requested 1.9 in fire suppression? as a practical matter, if that's not funded, what's the impact on the department?
You're sticking up like you want to say something. Hang on here. Mr. Chairman. Well, basically, if we don't fund that portion of the fire suppression budget, then we would simply have to take it out of some place else in the department. We're not in a position where we cannot fight fires. So we simply would have to take it somewhere else within the department.
And this would just
I thought within the statement you said that part of it was for the ongoing operation that's year after year, and then the additional amount was for one fire. Was that it?
The other, Mr. Chairman, the other option is just to go for an emergency declaration later on when came about, if we had additional fires or something like that.
The second area I wanted to raise with you is the status of the process for oil and gas lease sales. With the court injunction on sale 78 and the ombudsman report, do you feel that it is a good time to revisit those process issues? Do you feel that it's something this legislature should concern itself with? Are you concerned about the ability of the department to carry out the lease sale program with the situation as we find it today?
Mr. Chairman, the answer to many of those questions is yes. I think the department and I in particular are quite concerned about the direction that we're heading at this point. Is it something that the legislature should address? The answer again is yes. I think it's something that most likely should be addressed this year. And if I might give a little bit of background, if there's an interest at this point in time, the courts for about the last year have been saying that or pushing the department in a direction that should be of great concern, particularly to this committee. What they are saying is that at a lease sale stage, that they would like a great deal more information than we are currently giving them. And this, in terms of both oil and gas lease sales and in terms of mining, and the underlying principle here is that additional work would be done in terms of say, a NEPA review or an EIS review type level of information. The problem with that is that the specifics of the information that the courts are asking for are really not known until you have a specific oil and gas discovery or you have a specific mining property that is prepared to go through the details of where a tailings impoundment would be or et cetera. So we're caught sort of in a never-never land at this point. The courts are asking for very detailed information very early on in a process, which, at least in my estimation and in looking at the statutes, what the legislature has said, that is not necessarily the time when that information has to be available. And logically, the courts can ask, but logically that information simply isn't available at that time. So it is something that will ultimately become a budget issue as much as anything else if we're forced in that direction to gather a lot more information. What will happen is it will greatly affect our ability to get any our group of lease sales out in a given year. So the number of lease sales will be cut dramatically, and simply our ability to actually complete a lease sale will be affected. So again, in answer to your question, I think it is something that has to be looked at this year. We are currently in the process of putting together our own thoughts as to specifically how we should address it.
Look forward to receiving that.
Representative Henley?
A couple points. On the for a number of years now, we've been rushing to get our land selection done. And it seems like we've always had either supplementals or additional money put in. And I know we've made our selections. Is there a time limit on, now we've over-selected and we've got to do some additional work, but is there a time limit on that? And the reason I'm asking, I'm wondering, are we overfunded, or maybe we could look at the schedule to which now we're going to spend money on the rest of this in that particular area because, like I said, for years we've seemed like we put extra money in for that particular process.
Mr. Chairman, in response to your question, we are